on aisles to his side of the stage. A poem by Stephen Dunn on the death of a colleague from Landscape at the Edge of the Century, published by Norton and used here by permission on the Writer's Almanac. This is Billy Collins for the Writer's Almanac, hoping you will join us next time.
Greetings. Good morning. My name is Mike Koenig. I'm sitting in for Dwayne Bradley in this extended version, of Community Conversation. My guest today is Bob Stokes of the Galveston Bay Foundation. We're talking about the after effects of the Deepwater Horizon BP oil spill and just generally about the Galveston and Gulf of Mexico ecosystem. I have Mike on from Cyprus on the line. Mike, you're on the air. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good. Thank you. Enjoying your conversation.
Thank you.
It's my understanding, I've kind of been following some of the issues with the freshwater discharge into the Gulf and understand the real necessity for that to continue. It's my understanding that one of the major users of fresh water is the manufacturing and energy generation industries. Is that correct?
Yeah, hey, Mike. Absolutely. I mean, you know, a big user. I mean, there's multiple large users around Galveston Bay, but certainly our industrial complex has used a significant amount of water for years. There's a lot of different processes that require a lot of water. You know, many of those folks have made strides over the years in reducing their water consumption, but it's still a big user of water for sure.
I'm wondering where energy generation, particularly renewable energy generation, fits into the reduction of the use of fresh water.
Well, I will say this, you know, I mean, one of the concerns, just talking about energy generation and water uses, it brings to mind certainly fracking. You know, some of us have more concerns with the quantity of water that is used in fracking than actually the concern to water pollution or anything like that. Because
the injectables are not a big concern.
Yeah, you know, the wells themselves are not too much different than just traditional oil wells in terms of how it's going to impact water in the aquifer. But in terms of the use of water, there's more and more use for that. So I don't personally claim to be an expert on renewables, but certainly you know, wind energy does not take any water. It's not a consumer of water, whereas a lot of natural gas power production is a big user of water.
Yeah, actually, I think Mike has brought up an interesting point. You know, we talk a lot about renewables as a way to save oil and to reduce the carbon footprint, but especially in areas that have water shortages or potential water shortages, anything that reduces the use of water in the production of energy is its own benefit.
I would say it's
and
a win-win.
We don't talk about that.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
We ought to think about that more. I appreciate your calling, Mike. Thanks for that really good idea. I've got Tag on the line from Spring. Tag, you're on the air. And by the way, 713-526-5738, we do have open lines. How are you doing today, Tag?
Good, thank you. You know, I heard you talking about the oil problem in the Gulf, but my question is like, you know, there's been dioxin dumped on the north side of the bay. We got benzene. You know, I'm kind of curious about what is happening with pollution right now that affects the bay, and you know what's being done about it. And the other thing that really gets me is that was there ever any Superfund cleanup done on the north side where the dioxin's at? So.
Why don't you start by giving them the website address to the Galveston Bay Foundation and then respond to his question from
your phone. Sure, Tad. The website address is www.galvbay.org. And we actually do have a pretty informative site on the San Jacinto Waste Superfund site that is just north of I-10 on the San Jacinto River. Just real quickly for those who may not be familiar with the site, back in the late 1960s, a paper company on the ship channel had a bunch of paper and pulp waste that they put into a barge, and that barge took it up to some pits that were next to the San Jacinto River at that point in time. It was like 1966, 1967. They disposed of that waste in those pits, which was generally an acceptable practice at that point in time. But what happened was we had so much subsidence. Again, all these things are tied together. We had so much water use, particularly in that area, that the land sunk. And the San Jacinto River ultimately started flowing into these pits where this paper and pulp waste was. And that paper and pulp waste has a lot of dioxin in it. And so this is the single biggest dioxin site that impacts Galveston Bay is the San Jacinto Waste Superfund site. And it took years for people to understand what was going on and what the source of this dioxin was. There were hot spots of dioxin up in the Ship Channel area, up in the northern reaches of Galveston Bay, but we didn't know the source. Fortunately, someone from Texas Parks Wildlife was looking at some old aerial photos and put things together, and a few years back at this point, that site got listed as a Superfund site. And so Galveston Bay Foundation has been working over the last 2 to 3 years, if not more at this point, with Harris County to really put some pressure on EPA and the responsible parties. They were companies that inherited liability that weren't around in the 60s or weren't involved in the site in the 60s, but they are the ones who are doing the cleanup today and trying to get that site cleaned up as fast as possible. And that process usually takes 5-10 years, but we've managed to really get that process accelerated. There is a temporary intermediate cap on the site right now, so no more dioxin will come out of that site into the system. And we are, by the end of the year, EPA will have the results of their remedial investigation and feasibility study to determine what the long-term closure of that site is. So we made a lot of progress in a not too long a period of time. The good news is we don't think there's any more dioxin being produced by that site, but we're still working on the long-term cleanup for it. And it does, it has had significant impact in Galveston Bay, and it's certainly partially responsible for our fish consumption advisory that's due to dioxin.
We have open lines, and thank you so much for calling, Tag. Do you have any other questions?
Well, I like what he said about the temporary cap. I've kind of wondered about that in other big sites where they had problems to keep the ground or the rainwater or coming in and washing that stuff out. It was very interesting to hear about how the area sunk and the river was coming in. So apparently they've done something to keep the river from coming in there. But, I'm really disappointed about the Superfund thing. I mean, it just seems like it was a big deal back in the 60s and 70s, and you just don't hear much about it now. So I'll call. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, government cutting, there's always a cost to saving money. We do have open lines, and we are taking phone calls, 713-526-5738, also 713-526-KPFT. I think that the last couple of callers bring to mind something we had discussed, you and I, before the show, which is perhaps a salutary side effect of the Gulf spill from BP and Deepwater Horizon is that there are going to be fines and penalties, not including any civil cases or liability cases going forward, that will inject a lot of money into restoration, remediation, and other environmental works, not only for Texas, but for the Gulf of Mexico as a whole. Could you talk a little about how that money might be spent, how much money we're talking about, and what kinds of projects might be underway?
Yeah, so I guess there is a silver lining to all this at this point, because Texas does stand to have a lot of funding sent towards it for hopefully a very good habitat restoration projects that will improve the health of our local estuaries and ultimately the Gulf of Mexico as well. There's a whole different series of pots that we will ultimately have access to, and some of that money is here in Texas already, and some of it may not be coming for years. But as part of the government's enforcement action against BP, they have something called a NERDA action, which is a natural resource damage assessment. And to make a long story short, basically BP will have to basically fix all the damage to natural resources across the Gulf. They make a really complicated determination about what was injured, what needs to be fixed, and BP will then be required to spend that money to fix the impacts of those natural resources. Right now, BP has put out $1 billion with a B across the Gulf of Mexico for early NERDA restoration, and Texas has access to $100 million of that, which is a pretty significant sum for the Texas coast. And so There's several projects. I think there's five projects that Texas has announced. They're generally offshore reefs, artificial reefs, and then some recreational projects at some of our big state parks along the coast. But after that, we hope the state of Texas really concentrate on habitat restoration projects, things like wetlands restoration, oyster reef restoration, seagrass restoration, dollars to purchase water rights so that we can buy some water. Actually, it will come down to Galveston Bay. We won't have to worry about voluntary consumption. There's lots of opportunities for restoration dollars there. There's another pot of money that came out of some of the criminal penalties from the BP's oil spill that have already been settled. And that pot of money is something like $2.4 billion across the Gulf. The vast majority of it's going to go to other states, but Texas will have something like $182 million from that pot, and that'll be over the next 5 years, with over half of that money coming in years 4 and 5. But I think Texas is supposed to get something like $12 million in the first payment for that, and that will also go to hopefully habitat restoration projects across Texas, Galveston Bay, other bays across the system. And then finally, in terms of big pots of money for Texas restoration dollars, there's something called the Restore Act that was passed over a year ago at this point in time. But basically, BP will be penalized for every bit of oil that went into the Gulf of Mexico, every barrel of oil.
The fine is pretty steep per barrel.
The fine is per barrel is pretty steep.
Several $1,000 a barrel, I think.
And then it depends if there's a negligence on top of that, gross negligence on top of that. And so there could be anywhere between $5 and $20 billion of Restore Act money that will come to the Gulf of Mexico. And before the Restore Act was passed, all that money would have gone into an oil spill trust fund to clean up the next oil spill. But as there's so much money that the Gulf states basically said, hey, that money needs to come back to the Gulf to go to things like habitat restoration. And so we expect that Texas could get anywhere between $200 million and as much as $1 billion in that pot. And that also will be long-term money, probably over the next 5, 10, even 20 years. You know, they're still spending Exxon Valdez money in Alaska. And so,
why is that not entirely encouraging?
Well, it's glass half empty, glass half full. You know, I think having a long-term source of funding for this project is a good thing. It would be great if we could do it all very quickly, but then you have to work on capacity issues. You know, we couldn't spend that much money. I don't think the state of Texas could spend $1 billion in a couple of years. I think there'd be a lot of, you know, misuse. And so I think taking your time with it is not necessarily a bad thing here.
Yeah, I can agree with that. This is KPFT FM 90.1 Houston. You're listening to an extended version of Community Conversation. I am Mike Honig. I do Think Wing Radio, and I have a website, thinkwingradio.com, where I'll be posting some links and information on this conversation later. My guest is Bob Stokes of the Galveston Bay Foundation. You know, you talk about habitat restoration. I think there are people that when they think of habitat restoration, the first image that pops into their mind is long-haired tree huggers. And, you know, in terms of what I try to do, in terms of trying to see where there is common interest between lefties and righties and environmentalists and pro-business guys, I seem to recall that in a recent hurricane within the last year or two, because of the damage done by Katrina, because of the wetlands that had actually sort of started to regenerate because of the population drop and the flooding that took place, that there was a hurricane where, if my memory serves, they actually had less damage because of the extended wetlands that had developed that had kind of burned out the storm surge and such.
Yeah, there's, you know, wetlands are a great storm buffer. You know, we don't have enough wetlands around the Galveston Bay region to really stop a hurricane in that sense, but every bit of wetlands kind of is like a speed bump. I call it a speed bump for storm surge. It's not going to necessarily knock the storm surge down.
And it's not just wetlands. It's sandbars, wetlands, it's barrier
oyster
islands,
oyster
reefs. I mean, it's almost like defense in depth. If you want to think of it in military terms, it's really a sort of defense in depth. And when your defenses in military jargon are eroded, when the enemy gets past your first or second line of defense, that's when you start getting into serious trouble. In an environmental sense, you could look at it that way.
Absolutely. And I think there's a lot of reasons from an environmental sense, but also from an economic sense, to work on habitat restoration projects.
We're going to come back to that. I've got Johnny on the line. We'll talk to Johnny in a moment. Right now, we need to take a station break.
This is KPFT Houston. The time is coming up on 9:45, and here's a quick look at traffic and weather. There's a heavy truck accident involving two vehicles on South Sam Houston Tollway eastbound at Wayside. One frontage road lane and one ramp lane are affected. And there is slow traffic on the 610 West Loop southbound from Shepherd to I-10. Travel time is just over 7 minutes. The current temperature is 85 degrees. Skies are partly cloudy. Humidity is 75%. There's a 20% chance of showers today after 1 o'clock p.m. Otherwise, it'll be sunny today with a high near 94 degrees and a low tonight around 75. And now we'll go back to the extended version of Community Conversation with Mike Honig and his guest Bob Stokes of Galveston Bay Foundation.
And we're back. You're listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. I am Mike Honig sitting in for Dwayne Bradley, and the phone number is 713-526-5738. We are taking calls. Also 713-526-KPFT. Johnny, you're on the air with us. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay so far. I appreciate the conversation, and I apologize for coming in late. So,
oh, no problem. If you didn't, we wouldn't have anybody.
Isn't that something that you already covered? But what I would like to know is, with all these different pots of money that's been mentioned, which I think is a good thing, provided we have lots of controls to make sure it's not being wasted or being grafted by somebody, is there anybody out there talking about using some remediation monies to make it possible for folks, for homeowners along the Gulf Coast region to do things like putting up solar panels and or lightening the color of their roofs to reflect the sun energy, as well as making it penalizing BP and other companies from spending their money, remediation money, in advertising that lies to people, basically, about how great they are and this and that, instead using that money towards remediation?
Interesting questions.
Well, so let me just say this, Johnny. There's a lot of different projects and proposals that people will bring forward. I think, you know, our focus as an organization, Galveston Bay Foundation, is going to be specifically on the bay and the health of the bay in terms of these habitat restoration projects and water inflows projects and, you know, land acquisition projects to create that buffer zone. But I think there's an opportunity potentially to do things like what you've suggested as well. There are other BP pots of money that are really directly related to impacts to homeowners in the local area, and that's a whole different story out there. But, you know, I like the creativity. I like the idea of, you know, using these funds to ultimately save energy. That's not a bad idea, and so I think someone might take that and run with it.
Yep. We need to do a lot of aggressive things because we've got catch-up to play. Mother Nature will not wait.
Exactly.
Yeah, have a good day.
Thank you. Thanks, you too. Thanks for calling, Johnny. We have open lines, and we still have about 10 or 12 minutes of conversation here. So if you would like to join us, the phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. My guest is Bob Stokes of the Galveston Bay Foundation. And give us that website again.
So our website is www.galvbay.org.
Can you get gbf.org by any chance? That might be a good start.
You know, we're hooked into galvbay.org, and you know, we'll look into it.
Maybe something with gbf.org that can then link you forward.
But could be.
In any case, we do
have multiple websites for different projects, and we do have a lot of mirror sites where we hook people into another website.
One of the things that you brought up in conversation is increase in freshwater inflows into the bay. And in some of the literature I went over, there was talk of voluntary inflows of water, acquiring water rights. I don't know who would be assigned those rights or how that would work. What does acquisition of water rights mean, and how could that work in an area that already feels kind of tight for water?
Well, this is also a glass half empty, glass half full. There's a lot of water rights that people own right now that actually aren't being used.
Are we talking surface water?
We're talking about surface water rights. The groundwater water rights is a whole different issue. But so these are surface water rights. People have them. Fortunately, they're not using them currently. There's not a current use for them. If they were, then we'd have even less water flowing into Galveston Bay. And so there's a market out there for that. You could potentially go to For instance, a rice farmer, somebody who used to be doing a lot of work and may not be in the business anymore, but still owns his water rights.
Basically, so, aquaculture.
Yeah, basically aquaculture, and just using the free market to purchase those water rights and dedicating them. The mechanics of doing such a thing are still being determined, but there is a Texas Water Trust. You can dedicate those water rights to the Texas Water Trust, so basically the water could flow down into the bay. Galveston Bay Foundation or other nonprofits could hold those water rights. There's a lot of ways to do it. And it's just a new way of thinking about it. Let's go out there and actively acquire some of these water rights so that we can dedicate the water into the flow itself, and so that make sure it gets down to Galveston Bay.
Honestly, I kind of like Tag's thought that we could save water by going to renewable energy.
Hey, there's
a connection that we need to make more often. I've got Cassie on the line. Cassie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Okay, thank you. So what's on your mind?
I was wondering if there are any oyster shell recycling programs in the Galveston Bay area yet, and if not, if that would be something Galveston Bay Foundation would consider appropriating some of the funds towards.
What a great question. Tell us about the programs and also what they are for.
Yeah, thanks, Cassie, for that question. So we actually do an oyster shell recycling program already. Right now, for the last almost 2 years, we've been working at a restaurant down in the Clear Lake area called Tommy's Restaurant and Oyster Bar, where anytime anybody orders an oyster shell or an oyster at that restaurant, whether it's on the half shell or a cooked oyster, Tommy's will save the shell and put them into a particular bin for us, and we come sometimes 2 to 3 times a week to collect that shell, bring it out to a recycling center that we've created. And in that 2 year period, we've recycled over 80 tons of oyster shell. And that shell would otherwise have wound up in a landfill. And instead, we collect it and we take it and we have uses for it where they're reused for oyster reef restoration work in Galveston Bay.
Let's talk a little about that. I mean, aside from, I guess, essentially dumping them back in the water to provide habitat, potential habitat for species. Any other uses that they're put to for recycling, or are they primarily used for oyster reef building?
Yeah, they're primarily used for oyster reef building, but not necessarily for commercial oyster reef building. These are generally going to be near shore oyster reefs that their primary purpose is not to provide oysters for people to harvest. It's for the other benefits of oyster reefs, which are the
barrier protection,
but also the water quality protection. One of the things about oysters is that a single oyster can filter up to 50 gallons of water a day. And so, creating more oyster reefs out in Galveston Bay, we're basically replacing and restoring what we've lost in the past, helps us get to a point where our water quality is better as well. It's great habitat for fish. I mean, I don't know how many fishermen are listening to the show right now, but I guarantee you most of them have a great fishing hole that is right on an oyster reef or right next to an oyster reef because the fish love the habitat that the reef provides. So there's a lot of different reasons to do oyster shell recycling and oyster reef restoration in Galveston Bay. We've already begun doing that, and we hope to do even more of it as we get additional funding from this restoration dollars.
I'll tell you, I love eating oysters, and I understand the filtering thing, but of course the irony is that's precisely the reason why shellfish are not kosher.
Okay. Different issues?
Yes, it is. It's a whole other TV show, a whole other radio show. So, Cassie, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thanks, Cassie, so much for calling.
Hey, bye.
Bye-bye. Mark is on the line. How you doing this morning, Mark?
Hey, doing pretty good. It's a little bit off the bay question, but
okay.
Generally talking about water recycling, and so I sure liked your oyster comments now.
Thank you.
Just to keep the people from using so much water and stuff, I'm wondering about water recycling and the legality of it in Houston. You know, there's some municipal rule about being within 250 feet of a sewer outlet, so you have to connect and you can't recycle.
Yeah, and there's gray water and brown water kind of stuff when you're talking septic systems.
Well, okay. I mean, anything helps. I figure now I'm thinking about, you know, I'd like to have a tub of oysters in my yard. I don't really eat them or anything, but
some people think beer, but you know, oysters is okay.
What are our current options for doing some sort of water recycling to minimize our use here inside the city?
Well, I'll tell you,
in the urban zones.
And let me tack on to Mark's point that I believe there is a statistic that more water is lost through inadequate central water systems, pipes in the ground, than probably is conserved by any action that users can take. So there's that, too.
There's a lot of different issues. I mean, we can talk a whole hour just on water and water conservation. But, Mark, I'll tell you that there's a lot of people who use rain barrels. We have a new program in at the Galveston Bay Foundation where we're working with homeowners across the region. We started with a little pilot project down in Nassau Bay where we were working with citizens down there, and we taught them how to use rain barrels. And rain barrels are exactly what they sound like. They're barrels, you know, they can be 55-gallon or smaller, but they collect rainwater from people's gutters, and that rainwater can then be used in gardening needs around the yard. Not for consumption purposes, but for, you know, gardening type needs. And we do a lot of that. There are things called rain gardens, where people can actually build kind of, mini little, gardens that serve as little detention ponds on their property. And so you're basically slowing that runoff down, not letting the water get off your property, and winding way down into the sewer system. And so there's a lot of different, you know, projects that we could do, each of us individually can do to kind of save water and conserve water on site.
Okay. I think that kind of wraps it up for today. Thank you so much for calling, Mark. I appreciate it. Thank you to my guest, Bob Stokes of the Galveston Bay Foundation. galvbay.org. There's some information that he sent me. I'll be talking to Bob whether I can upload that so that you can link to it on my site. There's some stuff that I think would be really interesting, and I'm not sure if there are links to it on the site currently. Tomorrow, I will also be sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. I will have a guest, D.B. Grady, also known as David Brown. He has a book called Deep State. It talks about the history of intelligence and secrecy, and I think it's a very apropos comment, apropos topic to be working on now. Do remember that I also do Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT HD3 on Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. I have a website, thinkwingradio.com. And questions about how to hear me can be found at either of those sites. Have yourselves a great day. Thanks so much for participating, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has... We rely on listener donations. Visit kpft.org to support this station. KPFT listener members are welcome to produce an Open Journal. Prospective producers must fill out an Open Journal request form, which is available at our website with details. The program director welcomes your feedback on every Open Journal. Listener feedback helps KPFT determine what Open Journals are appreciated by the community at large. To get in touch with the program director, send an email to pd@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 308. Please stay tuned for Wide Open Spaces coming up at 10, and thank you for tuning in to today's Open Journal here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
You're hearing American crows defending their nest, protecting their young. Although the American crow may seem rather blasé about pillaging another bird's nest, like that of this house finch, it regards a threat to its own young as a punishable offense. Crows are territorial, very protective of their food sources, ferocious and fearless as parents. Young crows fledge, or leave the nest, when they're around 5 or 6 weeks old, but they still can't feed or protect themselves. Fortunately, their parents look out for them for months. In fact, Immature crows don't mate until they're at least 2 years old. They often stay with the family all that time, learn next year's brood. To protect their young, adult crows dive bomb people, cats, and other birds or animals. They strike with their feet, whip with their wings, and best thing you can do when there are baby crows around is keep your distance. Well, sign up at our website, birdnote.org, and we'll send the shows to you. Click on the link entitled Weekly Preview. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.